14. After the delegates had mostly cleared out, Gwen came back to the main hall. She wanted a look at the statue's base. Truth be told, she had wanted a good look at the base of the first statue that fell the night before and had gotten up early to sneak into the hall to snoop around a bit, but the statue had been repaired during the night. In the convention center, she saw servants cleaning up rubble, and Martin leaning on his staff, looking at the podium, deep in thought. Martin turned as Gwen approached. He nodded, smiled, then turned his attention back to the podium. It was pristine and undamaged from the floor up to the point where the ankles and gown tapered to their narrowest points. There, the material was sheared smoothly at an angle, as if cut with a saw, then sanded to remove any imperfections.
"How often do those stupid statues break at the ankles and fall over?"
Martin asked.
"Never,"
Gwen answered.
"The entire time I've been here, it's never happened, and none of the other sorceresses can remember it ever happening either."
"Well,"
Martin said,
"I'd say that's suspicious, but I think you're way ahead of me on that."
"Yeah,"
Gwen said.
"It's not very subtle, is it? I mean, at least last night the statue was posed with its legs together, so the statue only had to break at one point. This one had its legs apart, so the statue had to break cleanly in two places at the same time."
"I know," Martin said. "And even if the statues did fall over twice in 2 days, the fact that they both fell on the same person is just a dead giveaway. How is Britt, by the way?"
Gwen said,
"Shaken up. It didn't hurt her at all physically, but that kind of thing still takes its toll on your nerves."
"Yeah, I know.
Gwen, how well do you know Britt?"
"She's my best friend."
Martin thought a second, then asked,
"Which one?"
Gwen answered,
"Both of them. They're the same person. You get that, don't you, Martin? I mean, I thought I'd explain that."
Martin held up a hand in surrender.
Yeah, I know. It's just weird. I know they're the same person, and they look exactly alike, but they act so differently. And besides, they don't seem to get along that well."
"Yeah," Gwen sighed. "There's some tension there. They're just very different people."
Martin let this pass. He got up close to the pedestal, examining one of the broken ankles in more detail.
"What is this made of? Not more diamond, is it?"
"No, diamond is good for some things, but not as good for others. Besides, it'd be pretty boring if everything were made of diamond."
"I suppose this is what passes for boredom when you're a time-traveling wizard," Martin thought.
Gwen continued.
"Diamond is used for the large-scale structural pieces, but most smaller-scale construction and decorative work is actually a toughened glass."
"Really?"
Martin asked.
"Like Pyrex?"
Gwen nodded.
"Well, what do you know? Philip was right."
Gwen looked around the room.
"Hey, where is Philip?"
"Dunno," Martin said, still looking at the shorn ankles of the statue.
"He hung around for a few minutes after the crash, then said he had something he needed to do and took off."
Britt the Younger was curled up in her favorite chair, looking miserable when the doorbell rang. The second time it rang, she wondered why her servant hadn't answered it. The third time it rang, she remembered that her servant had gone out to get her dinner. The fourth time it rang, she realized that it wasn't reasonable to expect whoever was ringing to wait for her servant to return and answer the door. The fifth time it rang, she realized that whoever it was doing the ringing was probably tenacious enough to wait for her servant, but she'd have to listen to this ringing the whole time. She hoisted herself up from her chair and walked to the door, slowly enough that ring number 6 occurred while she was in transit. She looked through the peephole and was delighted by who she saw. Philip said,
"Britt, we need to talk. I think someone's trying to kill you."
"Of course they are. Come in."
Philip entered Britt's home and immediately had to stop to take it in. He had been in Atlantis less than a day, and while he was accustomed to everything being beautiful, Britt's living room still came as a shock. Like his and Martin's quarters, one entire wall was the curved, transparent outer wall of the city, providing a panoramic view of the ocean. Britt's home was much lower in the dish than Philip's, so the wall was raked at a much steeper angle, and the ocean outside was a much darker blue. Britt's floor was a single slab of pristine white perfection, with a subtle etched grid pattern to help give a sense of scale. Her furniture was sleek and modern, yet comfortable-looking. It was the kind of room Philip had seen pictures of in magazines and thought, "Nice, but no real human being could possibly live like that." It was the kind of room he had tried to create in his attic back home, but hadn't had the taste to pull off. Philip said, "Nice place." Britt said, "Eh," then curled back up in her favorite chair, which looked to Philip like a matched set of comfy cushions supported by just enough milky glass to maintain structural integrity. Philip sat in the identical chair opposite her, leaned in for emphasis, and said, "Britt, I'm serious. I think someone's trying to kill you." Britt replied, "Yeah, I know." Philip still wasn't sure his words were getting through to her. "I don't believe the statue was an accident."
"I know it wasn't, Philip. Obviously, it wasn't even the first attempt."
Philip nodded. "Yes, the statue last night." Philip leaned back in his chair and took a moment to try to figure out what was going on. After a moment, he came to the conclusion that what was going on was that he didn't know what was going on, and that anything beyond that was uncertain.
"You don't seem very worried," he said.
"I'm not."
"Someone's trying to kill you, Britt."
"Yes, but they're failing at it, and they're going to keep failing."
"How can you be sure?"
Philip asked.
"Because Britt the Elder is here. She makes me miserable, but one bright side to her existence is that as long as she's around, I know I'll live long enough to be her someday."
Philip considered this.
"I guess that is a pretty good bright side."
"Yeah,"
Britt agreed.
"It'd be even brighter if I liked her, or wanted to be her, but there it is. Even when your future is good, it's not necessarily the one you want. Anyway, as long as I know that whoever is trying to kill me will never succeed, then their constant attempts are just an inconvenience."
"That's one heck of an inconvenience,"
Philip said.
"Eh, I don't know,"
Britt said.
"It's always over fast, and they come to wherever I am. Really, as attempted murderers go, I think I'm getting pretty good service."
Philip was about to comment on this when the door opened. Britt's servant walked in, carrying a steaming crock of some fantastic-smelling liquid. Unlike all of the other servants Philip had seen, Britt's servant was average height, and while thin and in good condition, he was not so muscular as to be bulky. He was dressed in the same ridiculous mesh top and kilt as all servants, but he somehow wore it with more dignity than the others. As he entered, the servant said,
"I'm back, and I got that soup you like. The shop was about to close, so I had to beg a bit, but I told them it was for you, and there's no problem."
The servant saw Philip.
"Oh, I didn't know you were going to have company for dinner. I'm glad I got extra soup."
Britt stood and said,
"Ah, I should introduce you. This is my servant, Nicholas."
The servant bowed slightly, still smiling, and said,
"Please call me Nick. You must be Philip."
Philip stood up and returned the bow.
"It's good to meet you, Nick."
Nick looked Philip in the eye, kept his smile turned up to maximum, and said,
"It's good to meet you, Philip. I've heard a lot about you."
Philip said,
"I hope you heard good things."
Nick held the smile and the eye contact just long enough to make Philip uncomfortable, then said,
"I know you do."
Nick and Britt shared a small laugh, which Philip joined in an attempt to be pleasant. Nick winked at Philip so quickly that he wasn't really sure he'd seen it. Then Nick started walking toward the door at the side of the room.
"You two get comfortable,"
he said.
"I'll pour this soup into a couple of bowls for you and be right back."
"Actually,"
Britt said, stopping Nick in his tracks,
"I've changed my mind. If you could please keep the soup warm for a little while, I think I need to get out of the house and clear my head a bit."
Nick bowed again, said that this would not be a problem, and gave Philip another smile. Philip wasn't sure if Nick was smiling at him or smiling with him. Philip said,
"I suppose I should be getting back."
Britt said,
"You could do that, or you could come with me. I wouldn't mind the company."
Philip remembered the look Nick had given him and thought,
"Okay, I guess he was smiling with me."
Philip had expected getting out of the house to entail walking out the door, But instead, Britt reached down to the floor next to her chair and brought up what appeared to be a small, rectangular sheet of glass. She held it with both hands, and the flat surface of the glass came alive with printed shapes and symbols. Philip leaned in closer to get a better look. Britt tilted the sheet of glass so that Philip could see it better. The buttons were all clearly marked. Philip only had time to glance, but he could see that there were controls for the heat and lighting in the various rooms in Britt's home. Various other buttons did other things that Philip was sure he could figure out if he had the time. He had seen some gadgets from after his time, but nothing like this. There was literally no place for any electronics that he could see. It looked for all the world like a simple sheet of glass, except that animated symbols and text were flowing smoothly over its surface.
"What year are you from?"
Philip asked, amazed.
"I'm from 1996,
Britt answered, more than a little puzzled by the tone of the question. She looked at Philip, followed his gaze to the tablet in her hands, then laughed.
"This isn't from the future. It's just a sheet of glass with the edges sanded. Our version of what you call the shell can project touch controls onto any surface, or into thin air. Usually the person using the controls is the only one who can see them, but I made this up so there'd be visible controls for Nick to use."
Britt pressed a button in the corner of the tablet, then pointed out the curved, wall-sized window into the ocean beyond. As if called into being by the act of her pointing, a glowing sphere appeared, dimly at first, then quite brightly, before dimming again to be barely visible. Britt lowered the sheet of glass and extended a hand for Philip to take.
"Our ride is here,"
she said. Philip reached for his staff, which he'd placed on the ground next to his chair.
"You won't need that,"
Britt said.
"Besides, it won't fit."
Philip left his staff on the floor and took Britt's hand. She tapped the corner of her control panel with her thumb, and the next instant she and Philip were looking in at the living room from outside the window. Philip looked around the interior of the sphere. At first it seemed to Philip that he was simply floating at a fixed point under the sea, but he immediately realized that he was standing upright, perfectly dry, and breathing normally. They were inside the sphere that he had seen Britt conjure up just a moment before. It was perfectly transparent, with a flat, clear floor and two clear chairs. She sat in one. He took the other. She pulled her legs up underneath her with her control panel on her lap. Philip couldn't easily read it from where he was, but he could tell that she was scrolling through various options. Philip asked,
"Do you just conjure one of these things up whenever you want?"
"I could do it that way. Really, it'd be just as easy. But I keep this one around all the time. It just hovers outside my window until I need it. I like knowing that I have a vehicle, and that it's there when I need it."
Philip considered telling her about his Fiero, but decided against it.
"Not yet, at least."
Britt turned to Philip and said,
"We have all of the oceans to choose from. That's 2/3 of the Earth's surface. Anything you want to see?"
"Surprise me."
Britt looked at him thoughtfully for a moment, then scrolled through her list of options and selected one. Instantly, the world got much brighter. The deep blue that had surrounded them was replaced with a lighter shade that gave way to an undulating plain of silver above them and an explosion of colors beneath. Philip had watched enough nature programs to know that he was looking at a reef. Bizarre organic shapes in colors Philip had never imagined spread out beneath them, fading into the murky blue distance. As Britt piloted their craft between the silver boundary above and the neon obstacles below, a school of fish, swimming in tight formation, played chicken with their craft. The fish swam straight ahead, directly into Britt and Philip's path, then parted silently, enveloping them for a moment before reforming behind them, as if nothing had been in their way to begin with. A strange shadow fell over Philip. He looked up and saw that a manta ray was swimming overhead, briefly eclipsing the sun. Philip said,
"I just can't get over it, Britt."
Britt said,
"Yeah?"
"Yeah. This submarine, it's amazing. There are no seams, no moving parts. It's so elegant. And the fact that I know exactly how it works just makes it more impressive. I mean, it's all the same basic things we've all been doing all along. Replicating, materializing, levitating, and moving through time and space. But it just never occurred to us to put it all together like this.
I'm glad you approve.
Philip
stammered.
I once made a car indestructible and gave it unlimited fuel. I thought that was pretty clever. I see now that was so needlessly complex. I could have just made it move forward without the engine. It would have been silent, which would be a bit weird, but I'd have thought of some way around that.
That's an easy fix, Britt said. It's not hard to alter something's sound and light signatures. This bubble is completely silent and invisible.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. We could hover over Disneyland watching kids ride the teacups for an hour and nobody would see us.
That would be great for hopping around time, checking out historic events, Philip said.
Yeah, Britt agreed. I considered that, but then I realized that most of history is made up of things I'm actually pretty happy that I wasn't there to see.
Good point. I once went to the Kennedy assassination. I wanted to see who that shadowy figure on the grassy knoll was.
Britt's eyes widened.
You actually went to the grassy knoll?
Philip nodded.
Who was there? Britt asked.
Philip gritted his teeth.
Nobody, until I got there. Luckily, not many people saw me. I managed to stay in the shadows.
They continued their tour of the reef in silence for a moment. Then Philip continued.
Anyway, like I was saying, it just never occurred to me to assemble these kinds of complex constructions, like this sub, or the elevator platforms, or, frankly, Atlantis itself. I'm just blown away by it all, and Gwen tells me it was all your idea.
Yep, Britt said. My idea.
Philip said,
well done.
Without turning to face him, Britt said,
I'll pass your compliment along to Britt the Elder.
Philip cursed himself. Here he was trying to pay her a compliment, and he had said the exact wrong thing. He started to apologize, but Britt cut him off.
No, Philip, I'm sorry. You were just being nice, and I handled that gracelessly. I did come up with the ideas, laying down materials an atom at a time, using the objects made that way to build complex structures and devices, building Atlantis if it didn't already exist. Heck, going to Atlantis in the first place, they were all my ideas. The whole reason I wanted to go to Atlantis was that I had all these things I wanted to try. And it's hard to do that when you're living with your parents in Racine, Wisconsin.
What did you do for a living in Racine?
Philip asked.
I was a tour guide at the Johnson Wax Building. That Frank Lloyd Wright really knew how to design a building. Except for the roofs, they always leak. Seems like a funny thing for the world's greatest architect to be bad at. Roofs? It's kind of the primary reason to make a building in the first place, wouldn't you say? To keep the rain out?
Philip agreed.
Anyway, Britt continued, I had all these crazy ideas I couldn't wait to try, no place to try them, so I go back in time to Atlantis, and when I get there, Britt the Elder is waiting for me with the good news that she already tried my ideas, and they all worked. She'd use them to build the city, just like I wanted to, and all of the people who live there are very grateful to her.